Welcome to Liberty on the Air, WRKO AM 680, the talk of Boston. I'm your host, Dan Fishman, in studio with Jeff Lyons, Ken Van Tassel, Will Anderson, rocking the producer's booth right now, hooking us up. You want to join the conversation? Our phone number is 617-266-6868. You can send us a text message to 680-680. Head over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/libertyontheair, and you can join the live stream, see our ugly mugs, and other than that, you might have to send up smoke signals to get a message to us. But any one of those things, we're going to hear what you have to say. We're going to talk about net neutrality, which is the hot topic this week. But before we do that, I want to tease next week's show. Next week, we have one of the superstars of the Libertarian Party, Larry Sharp, who's running for governor of New York. Larry is a great candidate, vet, small business owner, motivational speaker, consultant. He's really doing a lot in New York, been actively involved in what's happening in the political scene. Also was a vice presidential candidate in 2016, ended up being the runner-up to Bill Weld down at Orlando. So next week, and I'm teasing that, Larry's going to be on the air with us live, answering your questions and our questions. And we're going to have a clip from him later on so you can hear a little bit of what Larry's about. But before we get that going, I want to talk about net neutrality, which is the hot topic that's going on nationwide right now. The Trump administration has announced that they are going to roll back the Obama administration's regulations that made the internet a utility and allowed it to be regulated by the FCC. The FCC chairperson, Ajit Patel, I believe. No.
Ajit Pai?
Ajit Pai. Thank
you,
Jeff.
You've done your pre-show homework, Dan. I've seen that.
I have, but I'm on the wrong page. But I still remembered Ajit, so I should get credit for that. So he is saying that they are going to they're putting it to the committee that they're going to roll it back to essentially what the state of it was 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So if you thought the internet was terrible 3 years ago and it got better, then I would want you to be able to point to me what changed. But let's go over what net neutrality is first. So net neutrality is fundamentally the idea that no packet on the internet can be treated differently. Now you're going to say, what's a packet? Well, a packet is an envelope. The way the internet works is that we send messages back and forth to each other in envelopes. When we send them back and forth in an envelope, we can only fit so many pieces of paper in there. So let's say I want to send a long message to Jeff. I'm going to send it, but I can only put in one 3x5 card at a time. I'm going to send 200 envelopes to him, and I'm going to label them 1 of 200, 2 of 200, 3 of 200. So when he gets them, he can take all the packets, 3x5 cards that he's gotten, assemble them into order, and see what the message is that I've sent. So that is fundamentally the packet protocol on the internet, how communication happens. What net neutrality says is that no packet can be treated differently than any other one. So if I ask to send a message to Netflix, Comcast, who's my ISP, has to honor that. If I ask to send a packet to Google, they have to honor that. If I ask to send it to Alibaba, if I ask to send it to some adult website, they have to honor them all the same. Now, when they do that and the traffic comes back, the fear is that Comcast or your ISP might say, well, we don't want to do that. You know, as Comcast, we have our own streaming movie business and we would rather people use our streaming movie business than Netflix. And Netflix takes up so much traffic that in fact, and we're not making any extra money off of that, we're going to slow down traffic to Netflix. And this happened. This happened 4 years ago. 4 years ago, Comcast decided they were going to slow down Netflix, and Netflix documented it. You know, it wasn't very hard to prove.
I mean, if you recall at the time, you would be watching Netflix and would say, if it seems slow right now, you should contact your internet service provider because that's why. And like everybody that's sitting there frustrated, Netflix is like, hey, call your ISP because it's their fault, not ours.
Right. And they were doing it deliberately. I mean, essentially, it's like a toll. They were charging a toll.
It's a hold up.
They wanted Netflix. They wanted other heavy users to pay them. However, they weren't even applying that in a fair pattern, because gaming packets, and there's a tremendous amount of gaming. I'm a PS4 guy. There might be an Xbox person in the room. Gaming takes up a tremendous amount of traffic on the internet. I'm a music guy. I listen to a lot of streaming music. Yeah, exactly. And also, I have I torrent a lot. Especially for me, in the line of nature of work that I do, I download various Linux distributions and install them. And the way those come down the best is via torrent. So when that happens, all this extra internet traffic is happening. Nobody else gets charged special for that. It's just Netflix. Comcast singled out Netflix. Do they do it because they want to compete with them? I don't know. You could make an argument that's unfair. But the real problem behind it is that what's really unfair is that I'm limited and that the only way I can get to the internet is through Comcast. And a better answer to that is to see what's happening in the innovation in what I would argue is the most innovative industry right now, mobile. And if we talk about how we get back to this innovative innovation that's happening in mobile, I'm going to go back to ask a stupid question. That's one that Jeff has heard before. But all right, everybody in the room who owns your own phone, raise your hand. Jeff, you don't own a phone?
No, actually, this last time I got a phone, it was leased.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Have you ever owned a phone?
Before that, yes. All right. Usually tended to own
a phone. There's always one. So everybody else raised their hand except for Jeff, and Jeff has owned a phone in the past. And it seems like a stupid question. Most people would say, yeah, of course, everybody owns their phone. But up until 1972 in the United States, it was illegal to own a telephone. You had to lease a phone from AT&T. And the reason why is because AT&T had a contract to be the sole provider of access for phone companies. What had happened was, prior to 1913, a lot of local phone companies were building infrastructure in the various cities that they were in. AT&T said, you know what, let's build long distance. We're going to start running wires back and forth between the various cities. And so they had long distance. And then AT&T said, well, you know what, we can partner with one local company. Essentially, you say to the local company, look, you partner with us, you become the AT&T local distributor, and now you have something that nobody else has, long distance. And of course, what happened? They crushed all the other, because why would you want to have local phone service and not be able to call the next town? So AT&T, based on that, builds a de facto monopoly. And in 1913, the government says, you know, you have a monopoly. We've been busting monopolies for a long time, but we'll cut you a deal because you have a unique property right now. So we won't go after you for antitrust. In return for you saying, we will provide.
You say 1913?
1913. Yep, that's the date of this. It's crazy, right?
Yeah, we're talking about the breakup of Bell.
Yeah, we're talking about Alexander Graham Bell's company.
This is the beginning of Bell. So 1913 is when they get the contract.
I see.
And this thing called the Kingsbury Commitment. You can look it up. I recommend everybody. There's a link to it on the webpage as well. So based on the Kingsbury Commitment, AT&T gets this deal with the government where the government will not go after them for antitrust, in return for which they agree to provide phone service to every address in the United States, and they agree to provide equal speed connection for everybody in the United States. That's part of the deal. Nobody can get left behind. Now, as technology progresses – oh, and the one other thing that they agree is that every phone in existence will work. So people aren't forced to upgrade phones. So this ended up – first of all, that ended up crushing
them. Sounds like how one Senate candidate would like internet to work from the U.S. Postal Service.
Yes, exactly right. I believe Shiva Ayurvedraya had said that that's what his vision was. So what happened was the phone technology from 1913 always had to work. And the guy who told me the story worked in Bell Labs, and he said that they had a 1913 phone in there, and every time they rolled something out, they had to plug it in and see whether or not it would still work. So
very scientific way of testing that.
Well, you know, electrical engineers are not particularly precise in there.
Absolutely. Engineers, keyword.
So eventually what happens is that 1972 comes around and Bell's like, look, we can't do this anymore. We're getting crushed. People are starting to want data. Even in 1972, ARPANET's coming online. And they say, we are limited because the fastest we can deliver data, if we're going to deliver equal surface to everybody, is 10 kilobytes per second. Because there's this house in the middle of Kansas that's just not near anything. We're running over the old copper wires. The fastest we can do to them is 10 kilobytes per second. So finally, Bell says, we need out of this. We need out of the Kingsbury commitment. So the government lets them out of it. And other phone companies start to come along. But of course, to compete with AT&T, you want to have long distance. So if you're going to have long distance, you have to have the property rights to be able to lay the wires. So one of the first companies to come along was Southern Pacific Railroad International, also known as Sprint.
Sprint.
Southern Pacific Railroad International.
Wow.
Yeah, because they had all the train lines, and so they just ran their long distance lines along the phone, along the railroad tracks, and boom, they were in business. Okay, another company that came along was MCI, which has since become Verizon. And so you have this
1-800-COLLECT.
Yeah, exactly. You have this explosion of phone service. And suddenly the cost of long distance plummets because there's competition. Because once it was opened up, people did everything they could to get people's business.
And because people were incentivized to actually lay down the infrastructure for it to happen.
Exactly, because they could make money doing it. And then in 1980, the government breaks up AT&T permanently into the Baby Bells. Ken kind of spoiled that story, but
82.
All right, close enough.
And they AT&T was asking for it actually at that point.
Exactly. Well, because they wanted to. Because
hang
they
on, nobody's asking for it. Okay, no,
they were actually asking.
It's 2017.
No. Yeah, this is a sense that nobody ever asks for it. However,
AT&T said, please break us up.
AT&T did want to be broken up because they knew that they were being hampered. And what happened though is that so if we go look at 1982,
does that ask you a question? Why couldn't they just break their company up without government involvement?
So they had – essentially they still had some constraints via the Kingsbury commitments to be the – I can't specifically answer, but
probably
they had some –
certain government
– exactly. They kept them locked in. Right.
So telephone poles and
everything. Right. So from 1982 to 2012 – now, you guys weren't alive then, but you know some of our
2012?
Listeners were.
I was alive.
To 2012, 30 years. No, you were alive in 2012. You weren't alive in 1982. But
I'm actually 5 years old, actually.
The innovation in 1982, you were five years old?
Today.
Oh. So 2012, the innovation in the cell phone industry in 30 years, it's unbelievable. And it happened because all of a sudden there's this explosion allowing all these commitments. The cell phone industry, the telephone industry is directly analogous to the – go ahead, Jeff.
So by that logic, what you're basically saying is that if we had broken up this monopoly in 1912, then 30 years later, Hitler would have had a cell phone.
Well, I don't know whether or not Hitler
would have had a cell phone. And who knows what Nazi Germany could do compared to what Russia's doing right now with the elections.
Right.
Everyone knows Nazis had alien phones before anyone else.
Well, I mean, the Red Skull, right? The Red Skull has that blue power.
That was the method of communication. Everyone knows this.
Yeah, okay.
Easy to look up.
If it hadn't been Steve Rogers.
The sheep will need to get out there and find out.
Captain America would have had a cell phone too, and he would have been asking for you to tweet.
Exactly. But the point is that we know that there was a real change in the way the innovation happened in the phone market because it opened up. And we're going to talk about what that change is going to mean to net neutrality because it's pretty straightforward to me. And I want to hear you calling in at 617-266-6868. Tell me why you think opening up innovation by ending net neutrality is going to make a difference. 617-266-6868. You are on AM 680, Liberty on the Air, the talk of Boston. We have Sam on the line. Sam, thanks for calling in. Where are you calling from? Hey, Sam.
I'm sorry, this is Ben.
Ben. Sorry. Hey, Ben, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Nebraska.
Thanks so much for calling in. And Ben, you actually are an expert in this in that you have worked for an ISP, right?
Yeah, I've worked at a small ISP, a wireless internet provider, for 16 years. I'm also on city council, so I get to hit this issue from both ends pretty much.
Outstanding. So, first of all, let's talk about the hype. Are you impressed at how much the hype has blown up around net neutrality in this last week?
I'm surprised at how many people are confused by it, even some libertarian-leaning individuals. They just don't seem to understand what it's about. It blows my mind that there'd be some libertarians out there that want the government involved in anything.
Right, because the government hasn't done a good job on anything else. Can you tell us about some of the things that you've seen in the last few years since the FCC has stepped in?
Well, the FCC realized it was so terrible when they first implemented it that they exempted a lot of the smaller internet providers. I think it burdened them so bad, I think they exempted ISPs with up to 250,000 customers. They started out at 50, and then they're like, oh, well, it's still terrible. Let's go up to 100,000. And finally, they settled on 250,000.
Wow.
So they're really only targeting a couple ISPs when you think about the amount that have that many subscribers. And, you know, that's just there temporarily. They could remove that at any time and really burden the smaller internet providers.
So let me ask you a question. You work for an ISP. Is the reason, you know, let me play a little devil's advocate here. Is the reason that you want to get rid of the FCC control, remove net neutrality, so that you can stop people from going to Netflix? Because that's the threat I hear.
I mean, Netflix is actually the thing that's driving all this. And, you know, I'd say at any time, Netflix is probably about 50% of our network traffic.
Wow.
But, you know, the free market is there. We don't charge. There'll always be somebody who won't be willing to charge you to use your Netflix.
Right.
And when I hear people say, you know, well, they're going to have tiered plans, that's telling me, you know, hey, I want communist internet. I want to be able to pay the same price as everybody else to do what I want on the internet.
Right.
Like you were saying, you use torrents. Yep. You'd what I call a heavy user.
Yep, definitely.
So you're somebody I would love to charge more for what they're doing, because grandma down the street shouldn't have to pay $30, the same price that you're paying to get your internet. And, you know, that's really a fair internet solution to me.
Well, and one of the things about it is that that's actually something that Comcast argued about. Comcast had said that they actually wanted to roll out a $2 a month plan that was essentially no streaming video, no gaming, no torrenting, but everything else. So, and they were forbidden from doing that by the rules of net neutrality.
Yeah. And, you know, the more the FCC can get out of it, the better it'll probably be, because, you know, the big companies also control all the backhauls coming out of the major internet nodes.
Right.
So if they loosen the restrictions on that, you could have more people bringing the bandwidth to more towns, and you'd have more competition at that point. Like if you open up a lot more of the wireless spectrum, the cell companies and Google and even a lot of the satellite internet companies are sitting on a whole lot of spectrum that, you know, wireless internet providers couldn't use.
Right. Well, I mean, because that's one of the big things that's coming out, right? 5G rolls out, I guess, it's rolling out right now in LA, and that's 100 megs per second up and down wireless.
That's actually pretty slow as far as wireless goes. I mean,
it's GPRS, right? It's the, it's over your cell, 100 megabits per second over your cell.
I mean, that's still kind of slow, really. I mean,
is that slower than 4G?
The system I'm looking on deploying, in the next technology upgrade, I'll be able to do 500 meg per cell.
Wow.
So you could easily sell over 100 to a customer. You know, you oversell everything.
Right.
But the problem is, you know, you can only fit so much bandwidth and so much spectrum.
Right.
So all these companies are sitting on all this spectrum, and I'm hoping the FCC tackles that next.
Well, right, because that spectrum is all available, right, to be sold. They're just kind of sitting on it right now.
Yeah, there's no reason the satellite companies need to sit on a whole ton of spectrum in, like, the probably about the 4 gigahertz range. And even down, you know, 2 gigahertz. And, you know, the wider your spectrum, the more bandwidth you can go through, like I said.
Gotcha.
So if you open those up, you know, you could have more sectors per tower. Your wireless internet providers could have more room to work with.
Let me ask a liberty-based question. So a lot of our listeners use VPN. At that point in time, you have the ISP really has no way of knowing where your packets are going, right?
No, so there's always a way around stuff.
Oh, really? Even if you were using so if I was using a VPN, the ISP could still shape my traffic.
No, I mean the user always has a way.
Right, exactly. And so, I mean, I advocate to all. We had to talk about this at the party that everybody should be using a VPN right now just for basic privacy protection.
Yeah, and it just slows down your traffic a little bit. But yeah, they don't have any idea what you'd be doing at that point.
Right.
They're not going to be doing any NSA level VPN peeking. So
exactly. So it's not like at this point in time, the FCC is actually talking about, you know, doing anything, or if left to their own devices, all the companies can do is actually make the service better. Ben, I want to thank you very much for calling in from Nebraska. We're lucky to have such an experienced caller on the line. You guys want to call back in? The number is 617-266-6868. You're back on AM 680, the talk of Boston, Liberty on the air. We're talking net neutrality, but, you know, I want to tease our special guest next week. Next week, our guest is going to be Larry Sharp, candidate for governor of New York. And I want to give you guys a little taste of what Larry Sharp is going to be bringing to the station.
But there's no such thing as democratism or republicanism. And there's a reason. Because the Democrats are always concerned about what is good and what's helpful. But they don't care how they get there. All they care about is getting there. If that means violence, if that means law, if that means coercion, they're okay with that. Republicans are the same. They're going to do what is right and righteous. And if that means taking away rights, going to war, bombing people, all good, as long as we get there. Those aren't isms. But the Libertarian Party's different. We have the non-aggression principle. And that means we don't want to force anybody to do anything they don't want to do. We don't want to use force, which means by default, our ideas, our plans don't end in violence. They don't end in punishment. We're going for something good. We have a shining star. We have a North Star. That's a real principle. That's why we have an ism.
And that's Larry Sharp, candidate for governor. He's going to be our guest next week, talking about the difference between libertarianism.
Sounded like a movie trailer. What was that?
Well, you know, it's when you get into the campaign cycle, you kind of get fancy stuff going on.
A little dramatic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty epic there.
it is a little bit. But so we're talking net neutrality, and I want to keep going a little bit. One of the questions, Jeff brought this up in the break. You want to make your point again about how both sides sort of have an advantage.
Yeah, I think net neutrality one way or the other, right? Like there are corporations who are against net neutrality and there are corporations that are for net neutrality. ISPs don't want net neutrality. Content providers do want net neutrality.
Right.
And one way or another, it seems like there's pros and cons to both, so it makes it kind of complicated. In a way that the government is a monopoly that would be regulating it, but without that, then we have a monopoly of the utilities of the internet.
Right. And that's exactly it. And you sort of get into that problem all the time and you hit the nail on the head that the problem really is a utility-based problem and a monopoly-based problem. Because when somebody has a monopoly on how you can access the internet, then they do have an artificial market. They can charge you
too much control.
An arm and a leg. Now, I would argue that for most people, they have that right now in their cable television market. They're locked into Comcast, who's usually the same person who their internet providers. And what's interesting about it is that year after year in customer satisfaction survey, the cable companies come in dead last. Even in 2008, when the banks were repossessing people's homes, people liked the banks better than they liked their cable company.
Well, I think the interesting part to note is that a lot of people get their cable and their internet from the same place, and a lot of people are not. A lot of people my age don't have cable anymore at all. They watch Netflix, they watch Hulu,
right?
You know, and they'll subscribe to HBO and Showtime and ESPN directly.
Yeah.
Instead, they'll go directly to the content provider instead of going through the cable.
Yeah. One of the interesting things, so we cut the cord a few years ago. We kept local over-the-air broadcast mainly because I like to watch sports, and otherwise I don't have a good way to consume. But, you know, for football,
it's all on YouTube.
Why wouldn't you get an antenna?
Well, I could. I live in Beverly, so I live kind of far away to get a digital television signal. I tried to set it up beforehand. I couldn't get it on the first floor. I couldn't get it on the second floor. I'd have to mount it on the roof.
But the internet is so free and open that we don't have cable in the house, but we still get football games through live streams on the internet, through YouTube, through Reddit, through whatever. You don't need cable in your house at all. If you're paying for cable, you're throwing money in the trash.
If you want high quality NFL coverage,
You want to watch the Red Sox.
Yeah, if you want to watch the Red Sox, you don't really
without
have
paying it. For MLB TV.
But you can good get it. Internet you option. Can get it for free for well, live legal. On
so,
internet.
Yeah, both of those are actually banned in the United States. And it's a perfect example of government supporting monopoly, the idea that you are although I guess it's the company that's actually probably setting up that restriction.
That's a good question. Do you think someone should be able to rebroadcast Nesson's broadcast of the Red Sox?
I don't think somebody should be able to rebroadcast. No, that's probably not good.
I don't know if you guys know this, but if you ban things, that necessarily doesn't stop people from getting it, because even though it's banned, I'm getting a lot of sports.
Yeah.
Yeah, but those are generally not very good quality streams.
Sure. Right, right. Well, I mean, I think the one that most people use is WYSIWYG or Justin TV.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are not HD.
It's out there.
Those are hard to get in good quality.
Well, I mean, we'd say, hypothetically, the best way to get the NFL.
That stuff is taking money out of the cable providers' pockets.
It is somewhat. I mean, there's no question. Internet threatens them, because it used to be that certainly in terms of, compare Netflix, Hulu, all the other providers, that hurts Comcast directly. A lot of people are getting rid of, extra channels. And in fact, why would you pay, $15 or however much it costs? Because it's difficult. Comcast doesn't make it easy to just get HBO anymore.
You still got to get a telephone line. Who has a home phone anymore?
Right. We don't.
They package all the stuff together.
Right. So, but you can get HBO. It's either HBO Now or HBO To Go. I don't remember which one is which. But one of them is, without cable, you still have access to HBO.
HBO and Go and HBO Now.
Yes, but which one is which?
HBO Go is if you have HBO cable. HBO Now is you can just get it without cable at all.
So, we have 5 or 6 shows. Watching those, we're still feeling the pinch of the restrictions of our provider, in that Comcast
sometimes
makes
it crashes.
Well, it's not that Comcast crashes, but sometimes that they make it very difficult to get just the channels that you want, right? For example, I would like to get just ESPN. Comcast doesn't let me do that.
Mm-hmm. You got to get the sports package.
Yeah, you got to get the sports package. We would actually like to be able to get the Chicago sports package. There's a person in my
house. That's
out
of market, Dan. You can't get that.
Yeah, exactly. But why? I guarantee you they would like to sell it to me, right? The Chicago people would like to sell it to me, but there's some restriction on the path. All of these things, this is what net neutrality gets rid of, okay? Or what net neutrality sort of helps to enforce. It's the FCC's oversight that allows them to set up restrictive monopolies. And there's never been a monopoly in the history of the earth that hasn't existed without government backing it up. So the monopolies that they have on controlling your access to content is supported by these FCC regulations. Move those things out of the way. Open up the market. And, the problem right now that we have, and we talk about the last monopoly in cable, the last monopoly is the last mile, the wire that actually runs to your house. But that's getting taken care of through technology as well. When we were talking with Ben, we talked about 5G, which is, really fast cellular connection. The vision is that your phone is going to be your permanent media connection. So a lot of people are using Comcast right now, Chromecast. Or off of their phone. And so they can stream whatever is the content from their phone to their local screen, whether it's a television or a computer or whatever. 5G allows you to do that with HD clarity perfectly all the time. No Wi-Fi required. What does that do for Comcast? That ends any question about net neutrality, because now you're going to have, in Boston, I think there are 5 4G providers. There's T-Mobile, there's Verizon, Sprint, AT&T, and Boost Mobile, I think, is – maybe there's
Boost Mobile's Sprint.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Then there's somebody else that I'm thinking of. But whatever it is.
But if you want to talk government control, when you get into wireless providers, arguably there's even more hands of government in cell providers just by the nature of wireless spectrum having to be allocated by the FCC in the first place. So you're not going to eradicate government control or government pseudo-monopolies in the telecom space by going to 5G. How's that going to help?
Well, because there will be so many competitors. Right now, you only have one option for cable at your house, but you have plenty of options for wireless service.
Yeah, I think that's what the root of the problem is.
Well, you
have
more than one option
for
internet at home.
Not really.
Satellite internet.
Oh, satellite internet is terrible.
You could have Fios.
Hughes satellite internet is terrible.
Maybe 30% of towns have some Verizon Fios.
Some people. And when you have Fios, then some towns have RCN as well. RCN is mostly in interior Boston. Yeah. But what's interesting about it is that in places where RCN and Comcast compete, nobody's raising prices. In places where Comcast is by themselves, they're constantly raising prices.
The problem is the same on both sides because you have government owning the telephone poles. You have government allocating spectrum and ability to use that spectrum. Can you create a 5G cell network tomorrow if you want to?
I cannot. However –
so how do we not have the same barriers for companies? Well,
I can pay somebody to run a T3 into my house or a T1, which are very fast internet connections provided by – either the phone companies or whoever. I have no idea what it is now. It used to be $3,000 to get a T3 into your house, which is more than I'm paying now for my cable. But the option is there that if you want to pay for it, you can have a high-speed connection that's all your own. And then you're directly on the internet. Nobody's filtering it out anymore. And that's an option that I think more people would take advantage of. The fact that you can do that, there's nothing that stops you from getting a T3 into your house and then sharing out that connectivity. Because when you get that connection, you're only being paid on the traffic that's going back and forth. So why wouldn't I do that? Especially like in Boston or, I mean, even in, you know, cities with like triple deckers, right? Get a T3 into one house, wire everybody else with it, resell the thing. In fact, I don't know why they're not doing that now. It seems like that would make a lot of sense.
Too much work.
Well, but it's Wi-Fi, so it's no work at all, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you set up the, you know, the basic Wi-Fi thing. You give everybody a password to get onto the network. They're good to go. The only thing you have to worry about is that people will, like, stream, torrent, et cetera. But that's exactly what we're talking about, is that there are people who consume so much traffic that it's unfair to charge them the same level. Part of the other problem with this is the way the cable companies price right now is they give you – essentially, they tell you you're getting unlimited access. They shouldn't do that. I mean, tell us straight up, you get 200 gigs a month or –
I think that's how I pay. I pay usually – they tell you up and down speeds.
They tell you up and down speeds. That's megabits per second. That's not total bandwidth.
But actually Comcast will turn you off at
some certain speeds, right. They will throttle you off, but realistically
– my friend got turned off 2 months in a row and then they got a letter saying your limit is now 250 gigs a month. So they can do that.
What was
he
doing? Yeah, I mean, I've heard
he was running a torrent server for
anime. Friends. Yeah, friends. Yeah. Okay, right. So yeah,
now people I don't know.
Right. Those are the legendary stories, and it's not even legendary. There are a lot of people who are doing things like that are running, perfectly legitimate shares of, you know, legal
software.
Right,
but Comcast's saying this is not an enterprise connection that you're buying.
Right.
So if you want to run a business that needs this bandwidth, you need to
step up.
Look elsewhere for that.
Right. Yeah. But they actually, they sell that as well. I mean, Comcast sells business connections.
My friend didn't want to pay for that.
Right, exactly. But my point is that there, Comcast is willing to sell you things along the way. So they actually have tiered systems already.
Right. So it's another argument in favor of being able to Comcast to offer a larger array of options with internet access.
Right.
And be upfront about it and say, this is what you get. This is what you're paying for.
Right. And realistically speaking, if I could save $5 on my bill and not have, gaming, because I don't do any online gaming. I get into the rooms, I get called old guy, and then a lot of
Does that really save you? Will that save you anything? Because isn't your game playing packet rate and streaming video rate approximately the same?
No, actually, I think I honestly think that game playing is actually less because they work hard to minimize that.
Yeah, sure. So everyone can play up and down the spectrum.
Exactly.
I think what it boils down to is that people are worried that without net neutrality, the things on the internet that take up the most bandwidth are going to start getting a little bit more expensive. And those people who use those things are worried they're going to have to pay themselves.
Sure. Yeah. And that's not going to happen. You know, if anyone's going to pay,
why should somebody who doesn't use that? Why should my grandmother, who emails,
but they're not going to pay. They're not going to pay more. You know who's going to pay more? Netflix is going to pay more to make sure that their content.
But then they pass that price down. And then Netflix goes up by $1. We riot.
They've already done that. They've already done that a few times. Right,
right, exactly.
They've it used to be $7.99.
Right.
Or $5.99 when you got discs and then they added streaming.
Yeah, now you're not even getting the DVD.
Well, right. Nobody wants the DVD.
You're just streaming, and you're paying more money than when you got physical.
Dan still gets the DVD.
I still get the DVD because there's stuff that comes out on the DVD that you can
play.
I have
a
PS4.
DVD?
Yeah,
we get Blu-ray everything. It's
and
awesome.
Your PS4 can stream that DVD and much quicker than you have to make a list.
It does the PNP. I have a media server in the house as well.
Dan still has a copy of Airplane on DVD that he accidentally put in his LaserDisc player, so he's trying to figure out how to get that out.
I have Caddyshack. Which I don't know Canadian if that was necessarily bacon. Worth the Blu-ray purchase because...
the cinematics in that movie are just unbelievable in 4K.
Right. However, the other thing that we know is that every time innovators come into the field, if we're talking about the taxi business, if we're talking about healthcare, if we're talking about internet access, innovation leads to customer quality. It leads to cheaper options. It leads to better options. We ought to see every other place that we've done this, it benefits. So when we talk about what the benefit is going to be of removing the government control, because the illusion that nobody's controlling the internet, that it's the Wild West, that's completely not true. Okay. The internet is absolutely being controlled right now. Okay. And your question is do I want it to be controlled by the government, which has a monopoly power? A monopoly on force.
The prime monopoly power.
Yeah, the prime monopoly power, the monopoly on force. They also have a monopoly on the ability to they can get warrants to look at what you're actually doing, right? Comcast, at least in theory, won't be busting in, as when we talked to Ben, they're not going to be busting into your email. They're not going to be busting into your web traffic to see what you're doing. They're not installing sophisticated ways to spy on you that the government can do. And as Edward Snowden told us, they have done. So if our option is to have a free and open internet and there are companies that control your access to the internet and you pay them for that and you have the option to choose between other companies or you have the government in charge of it, it ought to be a very clear answer. And we are back. Everybody on the air. I'm not going to give you the phone number because, you know what, we're only on the air for 7 more minutes. You call in now, probably going to take your phone call. But
why don't you give out your home phone so they can get you call?
Sure, I can give out my home phone. It's
617-680-680.
If we get a quick text in, 680-680, we'll read your text on the air if it's appropriate. And if
even if it's not appropriate.
Net neutrality doesn't decide to censor it. But
hey, you know, be careful there, Ken.
We want to talk about FCC and we want to talk about it's affecting us because of the FCC rules, the station that we're on right now, WRKO, has been sold. Will, you're going to have to help me out here. Were we sold to Entercom?
No,
we were sold. We were owned by Entercom, and now we're correct. Sold to CBS.
So technically, right now, we are in a trust company awaiting our new home to take us with opening arms.
Right. And our new home is going to be iHeartMedia. I, for one, welcome our iHeartMedia overlords.
But, I mean, to overview the situation, CBS Radio and Entercom had a merger.
Okay.
And in certain markets, as a combined entity, they owned too much of the spectrum in certain markets, Boston being one where both companies had heavy influence.
Right.
So they owned more stations in that region than was allowed per FCC rules.
And so already that's, kind of, at least to me, it seems a little bit silly because you're talking about, even if you want to say, okay, we don't want to have somebody have a monopoly on media, they certainly wouldn't have a monopoly on the media. They might have, 10 of the biggest stations in town. But if people didn't like them, there's nothing that forces them to listen to them. There's a ton of stations out there. It's relatively cheap to put a radio station on the air. I think WMEX was just for sale for $70,000, which you consider the fact, I mean, I don't know what their range is, but, let's say it's inside a 128. You're still broadcasting to a ton of people for $70,000.
Yeah, that's over 1 million people.
Yeah. And I mean, I have no idea how much it costs to run a station, but judging by that,
I think most of the cost comes from the FCC.
Yeah. I mean, certainly if you get talent like us on the air, that's pretty cheap. I mean, in this case,
there's some gray area when you're talking about Liberty and you're talking about FCC, right? Because we generally are not fans of government intervention in anything. But spectrum is a limited resource that needs to be managed somehow.
Right.
I know a lot of libertarians would say it should not be managed by government. That's probably the worst choice to manage it. But how would you manage authority to allocate spectrum in a world without the FCC?
And how would you protect that spectrum? So,
interfering station deciding
exactly
to
right.
pop up.
Right. I mean, pirate sure. radio happens all the time. And I would argue that the only way you protect that, in fact, it's a fascinating argument, one that I have never thought about beforehand. But in terms of the idea, we talk about libertarianism always comes back to this tragedy of the commons argument about what do you do with a finite resource that more than one person wants. Spectrum is a wonderful example of that. And if we say, there's only so much spectrum to go around, what is the body that protects that and that polices that? Right. If I pay for spectrum to broadcast all across the United States, however, some guy in Podunk, Iowa, or, wherever drives around and.
Well, who would you pay for the spectrum without the FCC?
Well, I mean, there has to be.
It's naturally existing, right? It exists naturally.
Right. Right. It's a finite resource.
So how can you own a section of spectrum? How is that possible?
So you're right. Well, my argument
magnets,
is.
Magnets, man. How do they work?
I mean, that's where we get to the whole tragedy of commons. And I make the argument that there are some things, air, right, seawater, things like that, that are actually inherently, I mean, this is where my geolibertarianism comes out, are inherently owned by every person who lives on the earth. And if you want to take some of it for yours, you are allowed to do that. But you are taking property. You have to pay fair value for that to the owners.
Except Entercom isn't using up spectrum when they broadcast, right?
Right. No,
spectrum is
– well, I mean –
it's kind of unique in that way.
They're restricting other people from using it though, right? No other station can broadcast on AM 680. RKO has the rights to do that. And if you try to broadcast on AM 680 – the FCC will come and hunt you down.
Right.
Are those one of the rights that come from the creator or one of the rights that comes from the government to broadcast on AM 680?
It's an interesting question.
I don't know if there's actually a right to that necessarily.
Yeah. Is it a right or is it a privilege?
It is. It's a privilege.
If we could go back and ask Thomas Jefferson, if we could teach him about electromagnetism and ask him what he thought about it.
Well,
we might have our answer.
I mean, he wouldn't be that far out of – he's only about 100 years removed from the
right.
telephone.
When we're fundamentally, I mean, this is really a good liberty question because who owns the airwaves, who owns the airwaves where, because that's another question, right? Does the U.S. government have the right to tell Canada that they can't broadcast on AM 680? Back in the day, if you look on your maps of New York City, you'll find an island sitting there in the middle. Just sold. I briefly looked at trying to buy it, but it was like $17 million, and that's way out of my price range. Called Columbia Island.
Let's be fair. It was just above your price range.
Just above my price range. Columbia Island. They had a giant antenna on it, and with that antenna, they could broadcast from New York City all the way to Boston. Crazy range. Who owns the airwaves? You could broadcast from the U.S. into Canada.
Maybe our listeners should go on our
Nothing
Facebook
they can
page.
Do about it, right?
They should go on our Facebook page. Let us
do
know
what
they
want.
Think about that question.
Exactly right. With that, that's your homework assignment for this week. You tell me who you think owns the airwaves. Post it to our Facebook page. Send it to info@libertyontheair.com. Or, heck, send us a tweet @libertyontheair.com. And we look forward to discussing it all next week.
People talk about sin taxes. The government taxes cigarettes because it says smoking is bad, and they want less people to smoke. The government taxes alcohol because it says drinking is bad, and they want less people to drink. So why is the government taxing income? Join that discussion and lots more, and listen live to Liberty on the Air with your host, Dan Fishman, every Saturday night at 11 p.m. right here on The Voice of Boston, AM 680, WRKO.